Hello, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva again, the editor of the journal, and I'm coming to you today from a conversation with a fellow West Coaster, Carol Yu, who is a doctoral student in psychology in her fourth year at University of California, Los Angeles, has a paper coming out in the April issue of Medical Education entitled Applying the Cognitive Theory of Multimedia Learning, an Analysis of Medical Animations. Welcome to the podcast, Carol.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Just before we started recording, we were talking about the weather, and I'm always getting harassed about talking about the weather on these podcasts, but it is hard not to right now as the east coast of North America is being hit by blizzard, and we're enjoying some relatively balmy weather. This paper, I understand, isn't part of your doctoral dissertation, but you got interested in it by virtue of your contact with Sarah Kim and some of the others who were or are working at UCLA there. So maybe before we get into your paper specifically, I can just ask you to introduce yourself a little bit by telling us what you're working on for your doctoral dissertation.
Certainly. My dissertation is on multimedia learning. It's looking at how we can use something called retrieval practice. So analyzing different ways to promote learning by replaying different portions of animations, and also what students think about that. So I'm interested in not only how we can improve instruction for students, but also what students think about their own learning and how we can get them to sort of self-regulate.
Okay, and on the former side, this is obviously building out of a long history of trying to understand how technology and computers more recently can help us in our pedagogical practices, but understand from some of the work you've been doing that the understanding of how these things can be used most effectively, rather than simply trusting that computers are going to be beneficial, is starting to grow. Do you have any overarching principles that you'd want to share with people with respect to how to implement these animations well?
Well, I think a lot of the principles come from the cognitive theory of multimedia learning, which Rich Mayer at UCSB has really developed. And I think probably the most abused principle might be modality. So when you're presenting information, particularly as a lecturer, I think it's really tempting to have a lot of information maybe on the screen or a lot of text on there. But really what we found is that it's best to produce just visuals or just images visually and have any text you want to say come auditorily. So narrating the text and presenting any images visually. So you kind of get people fully engaged using both their ears and their eyes for different parts of that so they can then integrate that information.
Right, and that was one of the principles that you were focused on in this particular work that you're publishing in April, is how these animations are actually being implemented. Was that the only principle, or were there other things that you were considering?
There were some other ones, too. We covered about 8 in the paper. The modality was a big one, and then also interactivity, so allowing learners to control the pace and the order of certain elements of an animation. That can be very important for engaging active processing. Also, signaling principle, so having cues that prompt learners to how information is organized in an animation, and that can be through headings, that can be through maybe a brief outline if you're showing a process-based animation on a series of steps. Also, coherence, which is another one that I think maybe is sort of intuitive, but coherence says that we should eliminate any sort of extraneous information, like, you know, the flashy graphics or the fun sounds that, you know, maybe we all like to put in there, I think are interesting to students. But what research has shown time and time again is that those interesting little bits are actually harmful for learning.
I want to pick up on your use of the word intuitive there for a second. Some of these things, when you do lay them out, as you've just done, they make endless sense. There will be a cynic somewhere listening to this podcast who will say, does this make any difference? So I'm curious as to what your best argument is in terms of the evidence base around why won't you be paying attention to these principles that you're using?
That's a great question. And, well, there's been a lot of lab studies where we present scientific lessons or animations, and then we'll test students on them, and we'll have a variety of manipulations. And the research, if you take a look at it, is really quite rigorous and does show in a variety of different situations, having, say, for example, interesting facts thrown into a lesson, which we might think, oh, that helps students pay attention overall. It's going to make them more interested. It's going to help them learn. And that might be one point of view. But studies that have tried to put those interesting facts in, no matter where they're put in, if it's at the beginning, throughout the middle, the end, these things all really end up being a detriment to learning. So I think looking at the research might be the best argument, and maybe just trying it yourself or thinking about when you've been in a talk or a lecture and these things happen, what do you really remember from that talk or lecture at the end?
Right. And so these principles, the eight that you chose to focus on for this particular work, they were eight that you can make an argument have been fairly well established.
Yes, yes.
And in fact, just as an aside, you've just reminded me, you mentioned Richard Mayer. He published an article for us a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So that might be a reference point for listeners who want to get a bit more into the basic evidence around these things.
Mm-hmm.
So you've taken those eight principles, though, for this particular work and used them to scan what we're actually doing in medical education. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, through collaboration with Sarah Kim and my other co-authors, we really thought that technology is becoming such a growing part of education, and there's a lot of possibilities out there for instructors to use. So we wanted to see if we take a look at what's publicly available for instructors, for students in the medical domain, then maybe we can see how well these things are adhering to the established principles of multimedia learning theory, and see maybe where areas of improvement could be, or help instructors learn how to select or develop their own animations for classroom use.
It seemed inevitable to me when I read your paper that there would be variability, and there are definitely going to be people out there who aren't doing things in accordance with what might be considered the current best practice. But this seemed like a really good opportunity for you to share with the field some specific examples about where things go wrong when they go wrong and how these principles might be put into play. So I'd like to get you talking about that a little bit more, but just before I do that, I realize I should ask you to explain to our listeners how you found the stimuli. Where did the animations that you were focused upon come from?
Sure. So Reiko Ogawa, co-author, helped us with this. And we decided we wanted to look at publicly available animations because those would be the most likely to be used by instructors and students. So we started with a Google search, just looked for medical animations in the health sciences and sort of narrowed it down. We wanted something, you know, long enough to give some good content, so at least 30 seconds, but not so long that people wouldn't be able to use it in, say, a classroom demo or a quick study session. So we limited the length of the animations, about 30 seconds to about 4 minutes, and went through, and after we applied the various exclusion criteria discussed in the article, we were left with 860 animations. And then from there, to make it feasible, we randomly selected 50% of them. And we had about 20 total providers of these animations from various websites. And we all agreed on a scoring criterion, and everyone scored them based on the different criteria. And then we put them all together and ran some analyses.
Right. And the ability of your group to rate these things was fairly strong? You had good agreement regarding how well any one of these animations applied the principles?
Yes, we did have pretty good agreement. We did a few test ones at first and kind of compared, made sure we were all on the same page, really tried to compare it to what was explained in the cognitive theory of multimedia learning to make sure we were accurately capturing what was in each animation. We ran an iterator reliability measure and found that we were in pretty good agreement.
And what would you say was your main take-home message from the analysis that you did? What sort of things does the field do well naturally, and what would you suggest that we attend to a little bit more carefully?
I think what was really good about a lot of the animations, most of them applied the contiguity principles pretty well. So that's spatial contiguity, which is if you have labels, those should be placed very close to the relevant visual elements. And, you know, more than 90% of any animations that had labels, most of them were doing that really great. And also the temporal contiguity principle. So if you're speaking about something, then any relevant animations happen on the screen at the same time. So that helps the learner kind of connect what's going on, you know, in the words and what's going on the screen.
Right, okay. And the bad news?
I mean, it's not like none of these are present in any of the animations. So we do put some examples in the paper. There are good examples of all of these somewhere. So, but what I think an area of improvement might be the modality principle and redundancy principle especially. So what that is, in modality, again, we want any words that accompany an animation to be presented orally instead of visually, so to be spoken instead of written. And if you are speaking the words, there's no need to reprint the exact text on screen, because that actually does distract the learner from focusing on, you know, the visual elements, which are important also in the animation.
Right, and so I can't remember how you presented examples or the list of specific examples to make these things a bit more concrete available in the paper, or should people contact you for that directly?
Oh, we have a table in the paper with URL links to examples of everything that we talk about.
Perfect. Okay. I hope that you had done that. I just couldn't remember seeing it. So it sounds like it was a one-off project for you to scan the literature in this way. What's next? What would you recommend for the field to follow up on with respect to your findings?
I think one area that we do need to look into is how these animations work, maybe at different levels of expertise. In the medical field, we have everything from maybe pre-med students all the way to doctors doing continuing training. And I think there is some evidence in the cognitive theory of multimedia learning literature that suggests that novices and experts might interact with certain elements of animation differently. So I think one way to approach that would be to kind of explore how we can best serve the learning needs of all these different levels of expertise.
Sounds like there's lots of work to be done for sure. And I realize your dissertation is focused slightly to the side of this, but it sounds like you're very well positioned to finish that up in the near future as well.
Yes, it's an interesting topic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And nothing better for conducting your PhD than to find something you really do find interesting. So I'll congratulate you now on this work and look forward to seeing what comes from you in the future. And I'll just finish by wishing you the best of luck finishing off your PhD studies.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'll also finish by just reminding our listeners that I've been speaking with Carol Yu, who's coming close to completing her PhD at UCLA in psychology. And the paper we've been discussing is in the April 2013 issue of Medical Education, entitled Applying the Cognitive Theory of Multimedia Learning, an Analysis of Medical Animations. And just by fluke, actually, I've only realized just before I placed this call that I'm recording a second podcast today on the same topic, on a paper that has Richard Mayer as a co-author, one of the individuals that we were speaking about earlier. So if you haven't downloaded that, take a look on iTunes for it as well, and talk to you all again soon. Thanks for listening.